Did you know that German geographer Hans Meyer and Austrian mountaineer Ludwig Purtscheller were the first people on record to reach the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro in 1889? They were joined by a local guide, two local tribal leaders, 9 porters, and a cook. We'll discuss this and other interesting facts about the intersection between humanitarianism and environmentalism with author and actor Wajid Hassan on this episode of The Curious Professor. Hi everyone, I'm Dr. B. Welcome to the Curious Professor podcast, where I take listeners on a journey of discovery to explore the people, places, artifacts, and natural wonders that spark my curiosity. On this episode of the Curious Professor podcast, we'll explore the fascinating experiences of the multi-passionate author, speaker, healer, and actor Wajid Hassan. But first, a trivia question. Who was the youngest person to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, Africa's tallest peak and the world's tallest freestanding mountain? I'll have the answer for you at the end of this episode. I'm thrilled to have Wajid Hassan on the show today. From Pakistan to England and then settling in the USA, Wajid has lived an interesting and varied life in many fields of endeavor. From a technical background as a field services engineer to stand-up comedian with over 20 years of experience as a union actor doing voiceover, narration, and commercials, as well as TV and movie roles. Wajid also encompasses over 40 years of experience in the field of metaphysics, healing, spirituality, and New Age concepts. He is one of the only Muslim-born authors writing about New Age philosophy, and his book, The Struggle for World Sanity, was a #1 bestseller on Amazon. When I learned about Wajid's work as a humanitarian and environmentalist, my curiosity was immediately piqued and I wanted to learn more. I hope this interview with Wajid will spark your curiosity too. Welcome to the show, Wajid. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Karen. Real pleasure to be on your show.
So let's start with, what's the most important thing I should know about you?
The most important thing that you should know about me, I'm just a normal guy who has had experiences that have been absolutely amazing. And what I wanted to let your listeners know is that if I can have experiences like that, then everybody can, if they're like curious like you are and I am, and open up their mind and open up their intuition, they can have enlightening experiences. So that's really what I can say about that.
What makes you smile the most?
Probably a good comedy on TV. I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy because I've been in the entertainment business for the last 20 years. And so I think laughter is a really good medicine. I mean, there's been studies shown. I know one person who had terminal cancer and cured themselves just by watching funny sitcoms on TV. So a state of mind, a positive state of mind, even looking at myself when I'm feeling horrible and just smiling at myself in the mirror, they say, you know, kicks in endorphins. So I think even in the midst of trial and tribulation, sometimes it's good to smile and just accept the reality of the situation.
You were born in Pakistan and your family moved to England when you were young. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about and what that immigration experience was like for you?
I was very young at the time. I was 3 years old. But my father was a high school teacher in Pakistan. And we lived in the slums of Lahore, kind of in poverty kind of conditions. And he had, a family to feed. And he got to the point where he thought it would be a better life to move to England. Pakistan was part of the Commonwealth there and they had menial jobs available. And so we packed all our belongings and, you know, there was no such thing as airports and airplanes. We just couldn't afford it. And it was a 5-week journey by buses and trains to, from Afghanistan, Iran, Yugoslavia, Turkey, Greece, France, and then crossing the channel to England. And so I don't remember much of the story, but I can understand now what migrants have to go through. in these days when they're trying to look for a better life.
Does that give you more compassion for the immigrant experience?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's appalling that these days that there is such a thing as refugees and migrants. It's a cause of selfishness between nations, and arrogance and greed and war that's causing all this. And yeah, I've tremendous empathy towards people who are displaced.
You were raised as a Muslim, but you said you studied Christianity in school. And in your book, you mentioned that at a young age, you saw no distinction between those two religions. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, Karen, I went to the mosque. I studied the Quran, did the Arabic prayers as a child. And then at the same time, growing up in England, I went to Church of England schools where we had Bible study, Christmas carols, hymns, which I loved. And so I loved Christianity. I loved Islam. And I didn't see any distinction between the two. I just saw them as two different aspects of faith are going towards the same divine principle. And I keep that open mind for all religions. I'm very happy being in a synagogue as I am in a Hindu temple. They're just different aspects of worship of the same divine source.
And you classify your book that you wrote as New Age. So how did you get from your upbringing in more traditional religions to writing in the New Age philosophy?
It was at the age of 16 that I met my own yogi master, an Englishman by the name of Dr. George King in London. And I was taken back at his teachings and decided to follow his concepts. Nothing against mainstream religion. I just found something that was more enlightening for me, probably based on past experiences I had in previous reincarnations. But it resonated with me tremendously to the point where I decided, and I've been following him ever since for over 40 years through his organization, the Aetherius Society.
And you mentioned in your book that you lived in a rough part of East London and you've had firsthand experience of racist attacks. What did you learn from those experiences?
Yeah, I deliberately put that in the book because racial prejudice is a big lie. I actually talked to another Christian minister. I had an interview earlier this month. And we talked about racism in America. And it's a big lie because we're all part of the human race. It's been indoctrinated by the media, by politicians, by leaders of religious that groups and that were separate. I think that people need to understand. If they understood the truth behind reincarnation, a lot of this racial prejudice would simply disappear. And that's one aspect that I also put into the book, that reincarnation has to be reintroduced again in the teachings of all religions, of all philosophies, because first of all, it'll explain the so-called inequalities. But most of all, people will be very careful going to war, knowing that they may be killing maybe their brother or sister or father or mother in a past life. And so it's very interesting also that Christian scholars recently are questioning the Christian church because they found out that the law of reincarnation was actually taught in the Christian church and was taken out and deliberately to put in this one life message in order to control the masses. So we're all one race. We're born in different cultures, different religions, even different sexes in order to gain experiences, and we keep coming back and back till we get to the point where we reach a stage of enlightenment where we can leave planet Earth and go on to higher spheres of experience.
In school, you were a natural at drama and comedy, and you stated that you wanted to study the arts in college, but that your traditional father wanted you to study math and science. How did you reconcile those desires with your family's desires for your future?
Well, it got to the point where, in high school, my drama teacher pleaded with me to get into acting and comedy, but my father would have nothing to do with it. I think he was scared as an immigrant and wanted me to go to the normal you know, of getting a job, getting into a well-paid career. So eventually I got into a technical career as a field service engineer, not only in England, but also when I moved to America. It was later on, actually when my master passed away, I got into a deep depression. And then my wife at the time, she said, why don't you do the little stand-up and comedy? You always wanted to do that. And so I decided to do that. And next thing I know, I got into the entertainment business, and for 20 years as a union paid actor, and did quite well. I mean, I didn't make it big, but it fulfilled something that I didn't get a chance to do in my early years.
So are you still doing acting, or is that something that you've moved on from?
Well, I did it in LA for 20 years, and then recently I moved to North Carolina to be close to immediate family. And I have an agent, but I'm focusing more on the book and promoting these teachings that I've learned over the last 40 years. I feel that message is more important than acting and comedy at the same time. But at the same time, if my agent has something for me, I'm not going to turn it down.
And I thought it was interesting when I was looking at your reel on Internet Movie Database that you had acted in Mad Men, and I was a huge fan of Mad Men, and I remembered that episode. So tell us a little bit about where some of the most interesting acting roles that you've had, or some of the things that you experienced in the acting realm that you think listeners might enjoy.
Well, Mad Men was definitely a highlight of my life. Unfortunately, Hollywood seems to stereotype ethnics. So, you know, even though I was raised in England, you know, they always want you to put on an Indian accent or play the cab driver or the doctor or the guru or whatever ethnic. And for me, at first, it kind of bothered me. And then I decided, you know what, if this is what they want and they want to pay me, I'll do it. And as you know, acting is just like writing or music or anything like that. It's extremely competitive. Where I excelled was actually in commercials. I did a bunch of national commercials as a character actor. And, you know, you have to handle a lot of rejection, like 99.9% rejection. But the big high, I guess, is when you're on set and you get to do the commercial or the sitcom or part of the movie. And it was very fulfilling in many ways, but very challenging in many other ways as well.
You are also an avid hiker, which I also enjoy hiking. I have not made it to Mount Kilimanjaro yet, but you have. You climbed to the top in 2006. What was that experience like for you?
It was absolutely incredible. Prior to that, I went to Kenya and did a safari in the Serengeti, and it was absolutely fantastic. Then we drove over to Tanzania and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. It terrified me looking at this huge mountain. But the, you know, the guides have this saying, you know, pole, pole, which means slowly, slowly. So it's one step at a time in climbing the mountain. I guess it's the same as, you know, life in itself. You can't rush life. You have to just take it as one day at a time. And so it was the most physically and mentally most demanding thing I've ever done in my life, but the most rewarding. And I've never felt close to divinity than when I was climbing the mountain, probably because I was half dead and I was kind of on my way out. So I was already seeing God. So that could be one aspect of it. But it was absolutely an incredible experience.
How long did it take for you to do that?
Well, you have to go up very slowly to acclimatize. So we took it very easy and took about 5.5 days to get to the top. But it only takes on the downward route, it only takes 1.5 days on the other side to get down. But you have to acclimatize. And the people who made it actually got to acclimatize. And it doesn't matter how strong you are, if your lungs can't have the capacity to take oxygen, then half the people don't make it to the top. And it can be very dangerous, altitude sickness. So you have to be very careful.
You've stated that you are always looking for ways to improve life for people, along with a deep love for our planet. Can you tell us about some of your most significant work as a humanitarian and as an environmentalist?
Well, you know, as you know, right now, Karen, this world is a mess, primarily caused by us. We can't really blame any higher source for it. We've created the karma. We have these endless wars. We have hatred between nations and races and religions. We have a political system not just in this country, but in all other countries, which is archaic and just, you know, has not created any lasting peace. We have an economic system that favors the minority, which who are getting becoming billionaires while many are into slave labor. So if you look, you know, looking at the conditions around the world, I was very fortunate to meet my master, Dr. George King, and follow his concept of service. And one of the major aspects of service that he put forward was healing, spiritual healing, not only individually, but the worldwide. And that's something I've been doing for over 40 years, which I find fulfilling. I also belong to a group that does that on a daily basis. We meet from 50 different countries, and we send out healing power to the world, to famines, you know, to the war like now in Afghanistan, to that earthquake that happened in Haiti. You know, we're always there, ready to send that healing power, which is a very tangible energy. It's not something that's airy fairy. It's like electricity, but on a more higher subtle level. But it is a real energy that is really lacking in the world right now. And that's was one of the main reasons for writing the book, is that, you know, there's a great change that's occurring on planet Earth right now. And the only way to fix that change, fix these terrible conditions, is by spiritual energy and enlightenment and healing the whole world.
You've also stated that women will be leading the world in the future. Tell us why you believe that.
Well, most indigenous tribes on the planet know, and the West ignores it, but they have to realize more and more that this planet that we live on is a beautiful, living, breathing goddess who has given us shelter through space for millions of years. And most of us are pretty much raped her resources, have taken from her and not given anything back. And now what's happening with this great reset, this great change, is that the Mother Earth is also raising her vibrations on top of the astrological vibrations of the Aquarian Age, which is demanding that mankind change. But she's also raising her vibrations. And part of this climate change is not only about carbon emissions. The ice caps are melting, not primarily because of pollution, which mankind has done for centuries, but also her spiritual vibrations are changing, where the ionosphere is gradually being taken down and more cosmic rays, ultraviolet rays, are being sent to Mother Earth to help her. And as this rise of this beautiful goddess is occurring, it will also empower women, especially women who through the centuries have been subservient and controlled by men. It will give them power. And in the centuries to come, they will be the custodians, not the political custodians, the custodians of planet Earth. And they will be in prominent positions. And I think they will do a much better job than what the men have done over the centuries in our bloody history.
This is all extremely fascinating. Can you say the title of your book again, if people would like to read further about this topic?
It's called The Struggle for World Sanity, and it's available on Amazon, Kindle, print book, and even audiobook, which I actually narrated myself.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about you or your work?
Well, in conclusion, I just want to let your listeners know that that despite everything that's going on right now, there, you know, it's been prophesied not only by my yogi master, but of masters of old, even the Hopi tribes, the American Indian tribes, a lot of them have talked about this great change to Mother Earth and the great renaissance of this great age that is coming in the next few centuries, where there will be no war, there will be no pollution, there will be no countries, there will be no political system or economic system. It will be a new age of enlightenment. And so the main reason I'm coming on your show and other shows is let people know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and all we have to do is push ourselves and send out this light to the whole world, to different countries. And that's the only solution that's going to fix the problem. And if they want to learn more, they can also go to my website, which is wajidauthor.com, W-A-J-I-D, author.com.
It was great to have you on the show, Wajid. Thank you so much for taking time to be a guest on the Curious Professor podcast.
Thank you, Karen. It was a real pleasure.
And now for the answer to this episode's trivia question. Who was the youngest person to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, Africa's tallest peak and the world's tallest freestanding mountain? The youngest person to climb Kilimanjaro to date is American Colton Tanner from Albuquerque, who summited in 2018 at the age of 6. The minimum age for climbing Kilimanjaro is 10 years old, but the park authority grants exceptions to children who have significant experience trekking. We'll end the show with something punny. I finally decided to take the road less traveled. Too bad it was under construction. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Curious Professor podcast. If there's a person, place, artifact, or natural wonder that has sparked your curiosity and you'd like for me to feature it on the show, please let me know. My website is thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe to the Curious Professor podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to become part of my community of curiosity seekers, be sure to visit my website, thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com, and join Dr. B's Hive. Until next time, always be learning and be curious with Dr. B.